The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
You're listening to The Pat Kenny Show here on News Talk. This is Jonathan Healy filling in for Pat, and it is time for our Friday Forum. And for once, I am in the minority and very happy to be so. I'm joined by the TD for Fine Gael from Mayo, Ciara Keogh, Labour spokesperson on further and higher education, Senator Laura Harman, and Mary Regan, political editor with the Irish Independent. You are all very welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. Mary, I'm going to begin. It's been a crazy week. I was on the hard shoulder on Monday and the missiles started flying at Qatar, and genuinely didn't know what end was up. It was very hard to kind of try and keep your head on straight. It's been a mad week in geopolitical terms.
Yeah, and we were just talking amongst ourselves before coming in here saying, you know, you have to really be up to the minute, right? Because things could have changed in the half an hour since we arrived into this building. And, you know, I suppose looking at all this as a journalist, the chronology is just insane. I don't know, were you talking about, was it last Thursday? But if you go through what happened since then, so the on Thursday, yeah, the bombing began. On Saturday, Trump decided to bomb Iran.
Yeah.
I think it was Sunday evening. We woke up to that news on
Sunday morning.
Sunday morning.
My wife very kindly woke me in the middle of the night saying that. I said, well, thank you for that now, because that means I woke up back to sleep.
Yeah. So that was Sunday morning when we woke up. I actually did a video for the Independent website on Monday morning, and it was just, you know, gone within a couple of hours. So Sunday morning, Trump had, you know, bombed the nuclear sites. By the time we woke up on Monday morning, I think he had called for a ceasefire. And then on Tuesday, I think we woke up to this, that he had led to the situation where he had his colourful language on the lawn at the White House.
Dropped the F-bomb.
Because the ceasefire had not held,
right? He wasn't happy. I mean,
so this was all in 24 hours.
But he was particularly less happy then.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then he got on his Air Force One and he was on his way to the NATO summit, and he was sort of live social media posting updates of what was going on and trying to say then that the ceasefire actually was holding, having said on the lawn, expressing his anger that the ceasefire wasn't holding. And, you know, he was saying Israel, he was basically tweeting, you know that Iran was not going to, you know, carry out any more bombs when he's on the Air Force One. So he wanted to go to NATO as a peacemaker, you know, pat on the back for having, you know, brought about peace, brought about a ceasefire. He was obviously very angry when he had that colourful language on the White House lawn because that ceasefire wasn't holding. He wouldn't be able to walk into the NATO summit as the man who, you know, carried out the deal.
As daddy, which is what he wanted. He wanted to go in as daddy.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it's just all highlights, really, you know, just the sort of sense of Trump not being in control at all. If he ever was in control in the first place, I thought the way it was all carried out over that period of 48 hours, just really, this was a president not in control and angry about not being in control.
Ciara, there's a comedian that I have often seen, normally when Trump does something terrible, and he makes the joke about there being a horse in the hospital. Trump is like having a horse in the hospital. You know the horse isn't equipped to be in the hospital, and you know he's going to do something, you just don't know what it is. And this week was really that. I mean, you just didn't know what was going to happen next.
I think so. And I think, you know, Mary put it right with that we're checking right up to the minute. But one thing I'd like to focus on is, you know, we always talk about controlling the controllables. And for the first time as a new TD this week, the instability in the Middle East came to my door, where I had a student from Mayo, not a student, a teacher from Mayo in Bahrain, ready to immigrate home, flight booked, the airspace closed down. And then instantly, what's happening in the Middle East became extremely worrying for the people in Belmullet, in Mayo.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that we can't control, well, firstly, thank you to our embassy staff and our heads of mission who are working very hard. But we're still in this instability. It's a very fragile state. So to the 10,000 Irish people who are out in the Middle East at the moment, I think what we can do is make sure you have a picture of your passport on your phone. Make sure you have your passport with you at all times. Make sure you're registered on the citizen register with the DFA. And make sure you're following your embassy and your airline on Twitter if you've plans to go home. That's the first thing we can do, is control the controllables for the Irish citizens who are doing fantastic work as teachers and everything in the Middle East. But the other side of it is, we have to do what we can to try and make sure this is an enduring truce and bring some stability to the Middle East. Because if it spills over, the consequences for the whole globe will be massive. And we have to keep our eyes on what's happening within Gaza.
Yeah, and that unfortunately did slip from the headlines. Did have a conversation with Peter Power of UNICEF yesterday about that. The other thing, Laura, was the way Trump was greeted then at the NATO summit. We had the extremely unedifying display by Trump on social media of a nice message sent to him by Mark Rutte, who's the head of NATO. And then the most, I mean, it was stomach churning, the amount of sycophantic arse licking that went on in public. I mean, did you ever think we were going to get to that point in our lifetime where just because, but the only way to placate your man is to tell him he's great?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think what we're seeing, you know, there's a lot of chaos and uncertainty in the world right now. And I know a lot of people are very concerned, and we seem to be getting, you know, live updates, you know, via social media. And I think, you know, it just shows as well the importance of having independent, you know, news outlets during this time in the world in terms of reporting on the news.
Isn't like them either, by the way.
On the news as well. But I think, look, I think there are no winners here. I mean, there's a lot of bad actors. I do think that, you know, Trump is probably the last person I would send in terms of, you know, negotiating peace agreements. I think when he dropped the F-bomb and that language a number of days ago, there was probably, in the context of some of the things he said, it was probably one of the best things, you know, that he has said.
The reason I love that more than anything else was because it was broadcast on live television. We're a little bit easygoing in Ireland. So if one slips through, you kind of go, oops, sorry about that. In England and in the US, there's laws against it. So they all had to grovelingly apologise afterwards for what the president had said. That was just my favourite part of the broadcast experience of it. But the sense that we have of this is the only way to deal with this guy is to tell him he's great.
Mm. Well, certainly, look, I think one of the things with the Trump administration, I think the only certain thing about it is uncertainty and in terms of dealing with him. But look, I do think that this is you know, distraction as well, I suppose, what is happening in Gaza at the minute. And certainly I think that, you know, Israel's aggression is a distraction, you know, from that. I mean, we had 33 Palestinians killed on Wednesday when they were waiting near an aid distribution centre. We've seen, you know, 55,000 Palestinians have been slaughtered, you know, since last October. So, you know, it is extremely worrying. We need to be, you know, focused on peace. And certainly here at home, there are a number of actions that can be taken, certainly in terms of our diplomatic relations.
Well, we can do that. But let's talk about the Occupied Territories Bill as well, because that has been dragging its way through the courts. Mary, you might give us a synopsis of where we are at now with this, because I think that there is a sense that something will pass, but what it is, we're not so sure.
Yeah, so the draft, or the government sort of version of the bill, was published earlier this week, and, you know, it essentially creates an offence under the Customs Act to import goods from Israeli settlements in the occupied territories. But it's only goods. It doesn't include services, which is what most of the opposition had wanted. That would make the bill more effective in economic terms. And Simon Harris says he's open to including services, but he needs the legal advice of the Attorney General about how to go about that. So we sort of have the sort of principle of the bill going forward, which is symbolic in many ways. But it has to go to an Oireachtas committee now, and it'll be scrutinised by all parties and independents over three committee hearings.
But that just sounds like they're going to talk it to death.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of talking about it. Whether it'll change, you know, the actual effect of the legislation or not, it's probably unlikely if the government has a majority and the government is relying on the advice of the Attorney General. But I think what we're seeing is this bill, which we thought might be in effect before the summer recess, like no one really believes that's going to happen now. It'll more likely be later in the autumn. And, you know, I don't think that Dáil is going to sit late to vote in this bill. I don't think that's really the intention.
Laura, Labour have been pushing this quite hard. I mean, is it not good enough that we get the goods part over the line? We can come and revisit services later on. Why is it so important we bundle them now and have three committees debating it ad nauseam?
Well, it's really important that we make the bill as strong as possible, and we send the strongest possible message, you know, to the Israeli government.
It sounds like we're not going to send any message because we can't agree on it.
And certainly the Labour Party have been calling for, you know, the Dáil, the Seanad to sit over the summer, the committees to sit if necessary. I mean, that's our job as legislators. We know that the majority of the people in Ireland want to see this government taking a strong stance in relation to Israel, in relation to what's happening in Gaza. And we know that services are a huge element of it in terms of trade, in terms of the tech industry in particular. And I think, look, there is advice from the Attorney General. There are also over 400 lawyers in Ireland that, you know, that have said that this can be done.
If you get them to agree with each other, you'd be very good, because they don't normally.
But certainly, look, it can be done. And I know that Senator Frances Black, you know, seems confident that, that services can be included. I know she has been meeting, you know, with the Taoiseach in relation to this.
Are we saying the Attorney General's advice isn't good enough?
Well, I think certainly we need to inspect that, and it needs to be discussed. It needs to be discussed in the Dáil at committee. And I believe that it can be done. We can sit during the summer to get this done and to make it as strong as possible, because Ireland has a unique opportunity now to be a leader in relation to this.
There's one thing that I've heard circulating in Leinster House, which is that people would like this bill to be passed before the presidential election. So by Michael D. Higgins signing this bill into law as possibly one of his final big acts as president before his term concludes. People think that would be very symbolic, given that Michael D. Higgins has been, you know, vocal on the issue of Palestine. But also a really interesting development on this is that Simon Harris was asking opposition parties in the Dáil to put pressure on their political, you know, equivalents or their political families in other European countries who might be in government to bring similar legislation to the table in their countries, a sort of contagion or spreading effect, that if other European countries bring similar legislation together, then it'll put more pressure on the European Union, which at this stage is not taking any action on.
Ciara, a lot of the people who would have voted for you in the same way they would have voted for Laura want Ireland to do something. We know that we have taken a stance. It's not a stance that Israel approves of, but it is a stance that's been taken. It does feel on this one like your party, the government, is prevaricating. I know you have Attorney General advice, but I don't think the people who are listening right now who want Ireland to take action appreciate the fact that it's going to be kicked around like a football for another few months.
One thing that I am really, really clear about is that we need to work together in all aspects to move the Dáil to change what's happening in Gaza, whether in Europe or globally. So you look at, we're debating here over goods and services within the Occupied Territories Bill. We're all on the same page that we want the bill passed. But what we're not on the,
because
let me
did,
finish
yeah,
for
yeah,
one second.
Not.
This is, I'm really passionate about this. So I had protesters, local people outside my office Monday a week ago, who did not understand why I didn't support a particular motion. Whether you are marching in the streets or whether you are watching the horror unfold on your couch, we are all the same Irish people with the same Irish eyes watching this horror, and we all want to bring about an end to this genocide. So arguing about the strength of this bill when passed is going to be hugely symbolic, rather than, you know, actually saving lives. It's a symbolic thing. So taking the advice of the Attorney General and getting this bill published as the first EU country to publish a bill, getting it to committee stage where we are open to including services.
How long have we been talking about this?
Let me finish this.
Well, how long have we been talking about this?
It is now published. It is now going to committees. Yeah. The legal elements of services will be teased out, and if we can include that, we will. But we need to come out as the first country who's publishing a bill like this. We want it to be robust. We want it to stand up to challenges. So let's get it done. Let's get it through effectively, and let's continue to work together and talk about the things that we are making a difference on. We're making a difference in Europe. You know, getting that review of the Israel Association Agreement was massive, but we're still split in the EU around sanctions. When the foreign affairs ministers meet again in July, then we can push for sanctions. But if Ireland is, you know, like this, there's Instagram posts up of me saying I support bonds over babies. I've worked with children for 20 years.
I know, but the point is that you're being positioned. But you're being positioned.
In the
you're being positioned here as blocking this, because the government fully blocked it before. Then they decided to bring in a version of it. Now we're fighting over whether services can be included in it. I hate to say it, Ciara, but it does look like the government is still dragging its heels over something that the Oireachtas could quite easily pass.
Jonathan, we've been positioned as blocking everything. to be honest. And it has real consequences on the street for the people who think we are genocide supporters and complicit. We want an end to this genocide. We want to pass this bill. We want, you know, we've intervened in the ICJ, of course. The Irish people need to stay together on this and keep, as Simon said yesterday, the Taoiseach said, like, if you were listening to the UK Prime Minister and arguments and debates in the UK Parliament yesterday, they're frightened that they didn't know what Trump was going to do in Israel, and they're out of touch now they didn't know what Trump was going to do, and they're out of touch with Israel. That's what they're concerned about. So rather than us fighting and throwing insults at each other in Ireland, we have to continue to move together to see an end to this genocide.
So I agree with Ciarán in terms of we have to work together and we have to end this genocide. And, you know, in terms of the Labour Party, you know, we are constructive in opposition, but we need to make sure this bill is as strong as possible. I think it will be a proud moment for Ireland and for our government if we can get this bill passed in the strongest form possible. And that has to include services as well. And we can sit throughout the summer to get this done. We've been talking about it since 2018, since Francis Black first introduced it. That's a very long time. We need to get it done. There are people that are being murdered in Gaza, you know, as we speak. You know, time is running out for these people.
I was on a bit of a journey this week, Mary, because I looked at the HSE announcement that they were finally going to start rostering key staff at the weekends so that we could, you know, reduce the pressure, maximise use of the bed capacity that we have without having to put in too much more. And then I had the two health unions in studio with me, and my optimism faded quite quickly, because it wasn't that they said they weren't going to do it. It's just they fear that they're not going to have the resources that's going to make a difference. I mean, this is one of Jennifer Karen McNeill's key proposals. Mm. The question is it going to work?
Well, I agree with you. I think the response from the unions would suggest that there's a long way to go in this. The focus here of getting hospital overcrowding sorted for once and for all is the right one. But how do you square the circle? Because we have health unions saying that there is an effective recruitment embargo in place. The government is denying this. But whatever way you look at it, there are 30,000 more staff in the HSE than there were four years
ago. Where have they gone, though?
There's
the
a half a billion more spending in the HSE than there was year on year. And the question is, you know, where is that going, or what is it being used towards? And you would have to say that the sort of work through of that 30,000 more staff isn't being felt in terms of waiting lists, in terms of overcrowding in A&E units at the weekend. So I think Jennifer Carroll McNeill has, you know, set herself up as this is her big solution. But if you listen to some of the health unions, they're still going back to this issue of more recruitment, more staff needed. And that is ultimately the only way to fix this.
Jennifer Karen McNeill has fully embraced the health portfolio, and she's a very good relationship with Bernard Gloucester, who has another year to run as the head of the HSE. This is kind of the centrepiece that she's put forward so far as how she's going to deal with a chronic problem that's been there. But this is the first time she's kind of had to stand up to the issue, Ciara. How is she going to do it?
Well, I just want to come back there on the wait times. If you're waiting on an appointment, this won't ease your pain. But the wait times are down from 13.2 months to 6.5 months. So there is a little bit of movement.
We've more, really we've more consultants in the system now, and we have fewer outpatient appointments, according to the paper this morning.
And we have a huge population increase, and we also had a backlog from COVID. But going back to Jennifer, she is so on top of her brief. She is so efficient. And I know you're saying this is her centrepiece, but she's already got free HRT across the line. She got straight. She's turning up to hospitals unannounced at weekends.
That's my point. I'm agreeing with you on that one. So how is she going to deal with the unions on this one? Because it looks like the unions are already kind of throwing a spanner in.
Well, there was similar with the HRT issue, and she got it over the line. You look at in our parliamentary party meeting, we get these graphs every couple of months from the minister showing trolley numbers coming down. There can be a blip here and there, but identifying that the problem was on weekends and them starting to come down. You look at my own local hospital, and I get, you know, patients ringing me saying, I'm sitting in a bed, I don't need to be here, but I need an MRI, and to hold my place, I have to sit here till Monday. And then when you get talking to the HSC, they say, well, the MRI machine doesn't work at the weekend. Mm. It does work at the weekend. It just needs the staff to do it.
It doesn't have someone pressing the buttons.
So, and I was speaking with the department this morning, and we have been assured that they are actively recruiting, you know, to help with this 5/7, but also seeking volunteers from within the workforce. And this was agreed, I suppose, in principle in the public owning consultant contract in 2023. Yeah. So I don't think it's the centrepiece. I think it's along with surgical hubs and all the different bits that the minister is working on. I think it'll make a difference.
Laura Harman, going back to the union issue, I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with trade unions, but what I'm saying is when it comes to the health trade unions, they don't move quickly. And one of the key words in that HSE document that kind of fills me with a little bit of dread is the word voluntary. Somehow we might have a group of people rushing forward to work on a Sunday, which I don't think is realistic. Mm-hmm. Why do you think the unions are so trepidatious about this?
Well, I think, look, this is one part of the jigsaw, and it's certainly not going to solve the issues. I mean, we do need more staffing levels. We need more beds. I think the movement from a 5-day roster to a 7-day roster in general, you know, is welcome. People don't just get sick, you know, during the week. And to be fair to the minister, you know, I do think this is a proactive move. And I know that the Irish Medical Organisation have said that this is part of the solution, but it's certainly not going to solve the whole situation by itself. I mean, at the minute, we have over 8,000 patients on trolleys. Recruitment and retention is absolutely key in our health service. I mean, I'm dealing with a nurse now in Cork South Central who's at risk of homelessness, a renter who's at risk of homelessness. And we have people leaving the country. We're losing key workers, you know, because of this. I think the housing crisis is absolutely feeding into this.
Now, that's not going to make them work on a Saturday.
This recruitment and retention issue as well. But look, ultimately, look, waiting lists, you know, are an issue, have been an issue. We are a country of waiting lists in many respects. Many people aren't even going to see their GP because of costs as well. That's, you know, there are a number of issues here. But certainly, look, I think, as I said, it's part of the jigsaw. There's a lot of issues to be tackled in health, and certainly our two-tier, you know, health system. I mean, a lot of people feel that they need to have private health insurance.
And on that point, Mary O'Regan, this was something that I find fascinating. There was holes sworn through blankets in this very studio that there are scans taking place at the weekends in key hospitals. And I almost had to disprove my own eyes because I was in one of those massive key hospitals recently at a weekend, and it was like the Marie Celeste in radiology. There was nobody there. There was radiology happening in the ED. Yes, it is happening, but if you were an inpatient and the big machines up the way were all closed, the private clinic around the corner, going hell for leather. I mean, there is a disconnect, isn't there?
Yeah, and getting best use out of their equipment, the private facilities, as you said, all their scans and big machines working through the weekend and late at night. But the minister has said that she believes it will make a huge difference, that she did mention, you know, the use of scans and other equipment throughout the course of the weekend, and said, you know, the new arrangements will create a more sort of spread out, more sort of stable hospital system. The argument from unions would be that if you have key staff working the weekends, then what happens on Tuesday when someone is off? What happens on Wednesday?
Gara, briefly.
Yeah, I was chatting about this morning, and it's about flexibility. So you might have one consultant that will work Wednesday to Sunday, another one that might work Tuesday to Saturday. So building in that flexibility, so it's not, you know, that you're going to have somebody missing from a Thursday because they're in Sunday. I think building in flexibility, so it's, you know, across
the week. It's not rocket science, but I think everybody agrees it's a good idea. Just how we get there, I don't know just yet. My thanks to our panel, Ciara Keogh, TD for Fine Gael from Mayo, Senator Laura Harman, Labour for Cork, and Mary Regan, political editor of the Irish Independent. Thank you all very much for joining us this morning. That is it for the Pat Kenny Show. Don't forget, all of the items are uploaded as podcasts. You can listen back to our interview with the former CIA director John Brennan on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. Just search for the Pat Kenny Show. My thanks to the very hard working production team, producer Niamh Dunn, editor Emer Bradley, on research Cian Burns, Leah Doherty and Kate Gunnell. Broadcast assistant was Anne-Marie Kane. Cormac McDonough was on sound.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on Newstalk.